I don't know if you're as chronically online on Twitter like I am, but have you noticed that for however many tweets are cheering on people of color or women in STEM, we still seem to have a problem with recognizing and addressing structural issues that cause many of them to leave? Or like how we have companies claiming to address their bias within the company culture, but then it's never clear if anything is actually changing. I've always felt at a loss for how to measure something like this and like know if there are tangible changes, especially when scientists claim that they're driven by data.
Although we are really moved by personal anecdotes or like a good story.
Mm-hmm. And today we're actually going to get into the story of using a STEM tool, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, as a way to reflect on STEM policies addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, so we're getting meta up in here. What is this, an episode of Community? A show that finished airing, I don't know what, like 5 years ago? Okay, so we are using math to look at issues in diversity in math, right?
Exactly.
There's something really interesting about using the tools of data science to analyze a data science education policy report that I think also adds a little note of justice.
Say hello to Carrie Diaz-Eaton. She's the Associate Professor of Digital and Computational Studies at Bates College. And in a study with co-authors Annalisa Hansen-Schrout and Jude Higgin-Topaz, Carrie set out to use her computational know-how to look at how word choice changes in policy documents do or don't reflect the goals of actually addressing diversity in STEM education.
And in this episode of Carry the Two, we're doing a deep dive on the computational tools Carry used to examine the differences between the interim and final reports from the National Academy of Sciences.
And we'll talk about how these strategies can be used by other organizations to analyze the changes in language and policy documents, and whether they are or aren't hitting their goals.
Hi, I'm Ian. I have been teaching choir to high school students for the past like 10 years.
Wow, that's so long.
Thank you. I know, halfway to my pension.
So close. And I'm Sadie, and I am the Director of Communications and Engagement at IMSI, which is the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation. And this is our math podcast, Carry the Two. It's the podcast where I explore the wild, weird, wonderful world of math with my co-host, Ian.
Although today, aren't we talking more about math education?
Kind of. We're actually going to be looking at the math used to analyze the National Academies of Science, Medicine, and Engineering's report on diversity in data science training. Basically, Carrie and her colleagues use this really cool technique to look at how language shifted from the interim report to the final one, and how those shifts were away from truly addressing issues of diversity and inclusion within the field. But since this is an education-focused episode, maybe you should be the one taking the lead?
Oh, no. I teach choir, and like the most math we do is counting. And even then, it's usually only to 4.
And then you got to repeat again, right?
1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2. Yeah, so, you know, I tap out.
Well, considering I've never had to manage a classroom of rowdy high schoolers, I still think you might have a leg up on me in terms of lived experience.
I'm not sure that's something you should envy. Okay, but tell me more about this report.
So, this report, titled Data Science for Undergraduates, Opportunities and Options, was put out by the National Academies in 2018. The interim report came out in February, and then the final report was released 6 months later, in August. And while the interim report was 35 pages of content, the final report was almost triple that. So it was 91 pages, not including things like appendices and graphs and such.
I remember reading it at the time when the process of the National Academies is to release the draft report, and then you have some feedbacks and period of reading, and then they release the final version. And this particular report had two reports that went through that process, an interim report and a final. And so I remember the interim report really, really well. I remember reading it. I remember being like, wow, this is so cool. Like they have an entire chapter on broadening participation and you know, they have a lot of ideas, and I'm excited to see how this process is going to roll out. Fast forward a year or two, or I guess about a year and a half, and I, you know, was at this conference on Environmental Data Science Inclusion Network. It was an Includes funded conference that I helped organize. And, you know, I was talking to somebody and they were like, you know, talking about that NAS report. And I said, oh, and at this time, I don't think I quite realized that there were two separate reports. I think I just assumed it was, that was the sort of one and done or something, or that it would just be a further revision. And, you know, they were like, yeah, it just doesn't really hit the notes for me. And I was like, well, what do you mean? You know, they had the entire chapter on broadening impact. And they were like, no, it doesn't. And I was like, yeah, it does. Like, I remember reading this. I remember this. I was so excited about this. And then they were like, yeah, no, it doesn't. And I was like, I know you're not wrong. I know I'm not wrong. How can both of these things be true? Right. So I went back into the report and looked and realized, okay, there's two reports. We're all talking about the final right now and opened to the table of contents and said, well, where the heck is the chapter on broadening participation? And just, I was like, that's a really good question. I mean, it just takes that moment of cognitive dissonance where you're like, what is going on?
So the length almost tripled, but they cut the whole chapter on broadening participation in data science?
Isn't that kind of wild? And these reports can be really important for policymakers.
All of these reports would look at later and say, okay, this report told us to do these things, so we implemented them. Or here's a grant proposal to implement these report findings and recommendations. And I think having seen that happen and being involved in that, I kind of said, this is an important document.
So we now have this long, comprehensive report about the state of undergrad education in data science. And it's a document that will be used by universities and funding agencies and others to decide on how to implement education practices. But it seems to be missing this whole section on broadening participation and including historically excluded groups.
Yeah, that's not great. especially when data science seems to be the field where big data gets analyzed and important decisions are made.
Yeah, scarily big decisions like who gets a mortgage or whether a person should qualify for bail. But Kerry wanted to give the report's authors the benefit of the doubt that, you know, maybe broadening participation wasn't missing.
We really wanted to go into this with the most generous explanation at hand that, like, okay, like, this is a document that just, it, the chapter was infused throughout the entire sections. It wasn't removed. It was just infused. And I see this argument used actually quite frequently in developing policy in other situations in post-secondary ed. So this is an argument that I've seen many, many, many times. We don't need to have a specific fill in the, you know, respond to that question because we're going to be expecting it throughout, or we don't need a specific statement that speaks to because we're going to be expecting it throughout, or whatever variation on that. So that was the first thing I wanted to look at. You know, could this be throughout? And what we saw was definitely not.
Okay, I think we jumped too far forward here. How does she know it wasn't actually infused throughout the report?
And now we're getting to the mathy side of this. So Kerry and her colleagues used computational text analysis to compare the two reports and find out which real changes occurred.
What exactly is computational analysis? Like, how does that work?
It's kind of a whole set of techniques, to be honest.
So in my head, I'm thinking about just broadly a large body of research methods that involve researching text itself using anything that would be algorithmic, computational in fashion to do so in large quantities. So that's kind of how I would classify computational text analysis.
Let's just go through step by step what Kerry did in her examination of these two reports.
Great, let's do it.
Okay, so step one, pick keywords.
Okay, so in this case, since we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I'm assuming those would be good words to look for?
Exactly. Except they want to be even more thorough and really build out a whole list of words to use. That's why they choose some basic seed words, like the ones you mentioned, and they then compared those words against another report that was coming out around the same time. You know, because we have to remember, language use changes and evolves over time.
Yeah, okay. Kind of like how the term queer used to be a slur, but is now kind of widely accepted as a way to describe a wide spectrum of identity.
Yeah, exactly. So they used another different report on diversity in data science, but in environmental studies, as a comparison. Basically, we know that language changes over time, so they just want to use a contemporary report to catch things like using the term Latinx instead of or in addition to Hispanic, you know, things like that. and they use that report to flesh out all the keywords to look for in their study. Now, this is kind of interesting to look at what words ended up not being used in either the interim or final report.
Oh, such as?
Well, originally they thought to include words like black or indigenous or disability, but it turns out those words were never used in either report from the National Academies.
Wait, never?
Never. And phrases such as African American or Hispanic were only mentioned once, in reference to a specific example.
Really?
Yeah, and I know this report isn't only about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I think it says a lot about what's being prioritized for undergraduate education in data science.
Yeah. And I think it's indicative of people's unwillingness to name the actual problem and instead use broad terms. Like, for example, we'd say, like, we're working towards diversity, instead of saying, we need more, like, Latinx or Black or Indigenous voices.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's crazy that they don't have any of those terms because you're just not naming the issue. But anyways, let's go back to the study. So they have this list of keywords, and the second step is to just look at the change in frequency of use between the interim and final report.
So a lot of data science, sometimes you don't know exactly the methodology you need to use. So you're kind of saying exploring, you know, to start with. So the first thing we did was just explore the data. You know, once you break down the whole, you know, text into, you know, a set of words, and then trying to just understand, okay, like, well, let's say we were going to do something like, you know, just look across just for frequency differences. Like, what are the signals in like word use? Like, what jumps to the top? And even though that's not quantitatively rigorous in many sense of the words, it gave us an idea, like, are we just barking up the wrong tree, or is this something worth looking at? And even from just, you know, looking at decrease, percent increase or percent decrease, or just that level, we were already noticing a trend in words that were commonly decreasing in the report versus increasing.
Ooh, I'm nervous. Which words were decreasing?
Well, the word that showed the largest decrease from the interim to final report was can.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that makes sense, right? I mean, the interim report was written when data was still being collected and recommendations were still being formed. A lot of those cans became shoulds or dids.
Oh, okay. So then what was the second most decreased word?
The second most dropped word from the interim to final report was diverse.
No, oh no, that's bad.
Yeah. And remember, that final report was almost 3 times longer than the interim report. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe a more sophisticated follow-up than just looking at the frequency changes would be to look at how core the keywords are to the document. So in other words, how much more did they tie into the rest of the document? The usual argument against having a separate chapter for broadening participation usually is something along the lines of, well, it's infused throughout the whole document, so it doesn't need to be separated out.
Okay. First of all, this sounds like another example of like not actually naming the problem, but is there a way to actually see if it's been infused throughout in a meaningful way?
I think we had a sense that we wanted to do some network analysis just because that was an area that coincided between Dr. Hansen-Trout and I. So, you know, we were definitely thinking about like, which words are more central, which words really glue and hold this document together? What is the real, you know, focus, and how does that line up with the charge, the original charge of the document itself, like what it was supposed to do? And broadening participation was definitely part of that original, you know, set of tasks this report needed to look at.
Okay, so how do you know if a word is central or not? Is this the network analysis?
Yeah, network analysis is really just a series of techniques that researchers can use to understand the relationship between actors, or in this case, words. Essentially, network analysis uses mathematical tools like graph theory and matrix and relational algebra to test how tightly nodes are connected in a network. In the case of a text analysis, this means determining how central one word is to the other words in the text. If we think about this as a visualization of like a cluster of words, words with a lot of connections means that word is central to the text.
Okay, I'm not quite sure I'm following.
Yeah, sure. Let's do a goofy example then. Let's say I wrote a children's story about a character named Ian.
You mean the New York Times bestseller?
Wow. How did you know? All right, so if you think about the connective tissue in sentences in a simple story, words like the or and, they're going to have lots of connections, right? Because those are the words that get used a lot. So they'll tie to all sorts of other words, and that means they'll be more towards the middle of a cloud with lots of connections.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But if you have rare words, or if they're words that are only used in relation to each other, then they're going to be on the outside of that cloud or cluster and have fewer connections. So let's say the word brilliant only appears once or twice in the made-up story, and only right next to the noun Ian.
That makes complete sense, and I have no further questions.
Okay, so the word brilliant has only one connection to the word Ian, and wouldn't be centralized in the visualization. It would be on the outside.
Okay, I think I get what you mean with this completely true nonfiction story about the brilliant Ian. But let's get back to the report. Okay, which words had the most connections? And I really hope it was better than the first finding.
I bet you can guess based on the previous finding we mentioned. It turned out those keywords were quite centralized, quite connected in the interim report. But when you compared it to the final report, you see those keywords like diversity were now on the outside edges.
Wow. Okay. So they were less connected to the other words?
Yeah. Meaning they were less integrated. And there's one big final finding we should talk about. The final portion of both reports includes a set of findings. And then in the final report, there were also recommendations. But the way those findings changed between the reports and what recommendations were actually offered showed important changes as well.
So one example in terms of the differences in the ways that findings even appeared between the interim report and the final, there's a interim report finding 4.1, and it says data science has the potential to draw in diverse sets of students and build in broad participation from the onset, rather than trying to broaden the participation later. However, strategies are needed to recruit and retain these students. So that's a really promising finding statement from the interim report. They're saying like data science has such potential to engage, you know, people like me in this field. It's just tailor-made. You can make a huge difference in your community. You just got to make sure that you're really attentive to the communities that you're serving from the outset and make sure you're not just bringing them in, but you're going to retain them. The closest finding that is mirrored in the final report says is finding 4.2, and it says data science would particularly benefit from broad participation by underrepresented minorities because of the many applications to problems of interest to diverse populations. So now we're centering data science and how it's going to benefit based on the work of others, and the work of others, and somehow it's going to benefit because those problems are interesting. It doesn't really have that empowerment flavor that the first finding does. It doesn't talk about supporting these students. And it is one of the findings that has no recommendation attached to it. So I think that, you know, even when we maintain in theory, some of the same language or mirror, it's a very, very different message that's coming through in each of those. And I think it's finding that it's really telling that the lack of recommendations associated with these, even when there are clear findings.
Yeah, that sounds like a shift to centering the field of data science rather than the people who are like actually doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
It centers all the benefit on data science, but none of the onus, which I think is probably the most frustrating part in some ways, because, you know, if you want to benefit, you also have to put in the work, I think.
And with that, let's take a quick break. If you're getting a lot out of the important research shared on our show, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called Big Brains. Big Brains brings you the engaging stories behind the pioneering research and pivotal breakthroughs reshaping our world. Change how you see the world through research and keep up with the latest academic thinking with Big Brains, part of the award-winning University of Chicago Podcast Network.
Okay, so I think we can agree that these findings are less than encouraging.
Yeah, but It does seem like this kind of research can be a productive way of pointing to larger issues and holding these institutions accountable.
And I'm sure that scientists probably trust it more because it's based in data science.
Yeah, I really like that she's able to use these mathematical tools as a mirror to reflect on how STEM fields are or aren't addressing historically excluded groups.
So I feel like I'm really flipping the script. I'm using math to analyze math policy, and somehow that makes it more acceptable. I don't know what to say to that, because I think all the other research I do that isn't explicitly computational and mathematical still has its place and importance and should be valued as a part of mathematics itself, because it's part and integral to the discipline. But I think there's something pretty sweet about, you know, retooling those tools to examine justice within the discipline itself.
So are these kinds of techniques being used in other fields?
Actually, yes. There seems to be a growing movement towards using these kinds of analyses to examine all kinds of policy documents.
I just saw an advertisement for a webinar of folks in the National Oceanographic Administration and Atmospheric Administration using computational text analysis to examine their own policy documents. So I think this is like definitely part of a really interesting wave that's coming.
Okay, that's great. And I would be really interested to see how this kind of analysis can affect the kinds of policies that get passed and how they're implemented.
Yeah. After speaking with Carrie, it was really clear that using her research skills to make the world a better place has always been a core drive. I mean, I guess that's not surprising when you hear what she originally went to college to study.
For those of us who grew up in the 80s and 90s, there was a big sort of save the whales movement, so sort of environmentalism. And I definitely felt caught up in that. Like, I wanted to save the environment. I wanted to save the world and make some big difference in that. I got really, really interested in things like animal behavior and really thinking about, you know, treating our ecosystem with respect. So I thought for sure, I mean, that was what I was going to study. And I had real full intentions of pursuing a degree in zoology, which I think is like a major that doesn't exist too many places now, but I won't take offense to that. And even though I had a lot of interest in math, I just couldn't see myself studying math for math. I really just wanted to apply those, you know, really get into the problems that I thought were going to be like the most important that humanity would face moving forward. And at that time, it was really thinking about ecosystem degradation and deforestation and sort of all of these things. And I got into it. It was fine. I definitely thought that the problems were interesting, but I really, really, really missed math. And then I finally realized about my sophomore year, I decided, okay, let me take more math courses. Maybe I just need to get like a double major. And then we just had the luck to hire a math biologist, which in the 90s, early 2000s was just a, you know, field just coming to fruition. And then I learned what I can take math skills and apply them to biology problems. This is perfect. I'll
save the whales with numbers.
exactly. So then I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing now. And I was really able to kind of find all those pieces coming together.
Wow. So it seems like she really found her way back to the original goal of, and sorry for sounding corny, but like actually making a difference in the world. Plus, like as a teacher, it's cool to see someone using the skills that they've picked up throughout their education being integrated into a career they like might never have anticipated. Like how a lot of my teaching is influenced by things not just like specifically covered in my education classes.
Oh yeah, that was definitely my experience as well. Like neuroanatomy was great, but the skills that I learned are totally different. Actually, I think Carrie says it best.
Try to remember that when I'm talking to students moving forward and mentoring them, because I'm like, tell me all the things you like. Don't just tell me the things about your major. Tell me all the things. There might be a place for you to really, and you won't even know to plan for that job that may not exist out there. I didn't, you know, math biology was not really popularized, you know, when I was looking at colleges to begin with. So there's no way I could have known, but you never know when they come in handy.
Yeah, I tell my classes a lot about how learning music is about much more than just like preparing for the concert. Like, you know, the experience of working together to a common goal or the tangible reward you get for like persevering through something difficult. But it's really cool to see a concrete example of that.
Agreed. Actually, you know what? Let's let Carrie have the last word.
I think that there's also a real appetite among communities that have been marginalized to reassert that this is mathematical research. It's not just about math, but it is inherently mathematical, and to be important and to be validated and respected for that contribution. And so I'm really, really excited about more than the research itself, the opportunity to sort of heal that community that feels that that they can't bring them their whole selves into the mathematical research. So I'm really, really excited to see not just how this field moves forward in the future, and what we call it. I've heard quantitative justice. I've heard all sorts of terms. But I'm also really excited for the kind of community that it's going to help form moving forward.
Okay, so before we wrap up, let's review the big takeaways.
So Carrie and her co-authors looked at the interim and final policy report on undergrads in data science, and were trying to see if issues around DEI were actually being addressed.
And they found that even in the longer final report, references to words like diverse decreased in frequency and were less central to the report as a whole. This means that rather than integrating big ideas like broadening participation, they were just being dropped in the final report.
And that's an issue because these policy reports are used in deciding which initiatives to fund and where to focus on improving the field. But it sounded like Carrie is hopeful that these kinds of textual analyses can be used to catch where these changes are being made.
Yeah, this is only one tool in a constellation of methods that we can use, but I'm really glad we're seeing the tools of math and stats being used to look at the issues within the fields of mathematics and statistics. Don't forget, you can check us out online at our homepage, mc.institute. We're also on Twitter at @mc_institute, as well as Instagram at mc.institute. That's MC spelled I-M-S-I.
And do you have a burning math question? Maybe you have an idea for a story on how mathematics and statistics connect with the world around us? Send us an email.
You can send your feedback, ideas, and more to sadiewitt@mc.institute. That's SADIEWIT @imsi.institute.
And we'd also like to thank our audio engineer, Tyler Dammy, for his production on this show. And music is from Blue Dot Sessions.
Lastly, Carry the Two is made possible by the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation, located on the gorgeous campus of the University of Chicago. We're supported by the National Science Foundation, the University of Chicago, Northwestern University, the University of Illinois at Chicago, and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Until next time.
You can do that. Ma, ma.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather,
unique
yellow.
Unique New York. Unique New York.
I actually do have a list of like that kind of stuff to use.
You don't know da da dee da 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 dee da
da da dee da. No, we can pretend I do.
Far across the distance, I see.
Oh, this is
I feel you.
Yeah. There's a Supernatural episode where the world gets totally changed because one of the angels decides that he hates the movie Titanic because he hates the song, and so he goes and saves the Titanic. That's getting used.
I was a bass.